funny is going to happen on this show.
Did something funny happen?
Yeah.
You'd never know it.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. This week, we're back, a triumphant return for at least two of us. We're not sure where Chris Galt is today. We agreed on Thursday. We've been gone for a couple weeks, and it's really my fault. And when I'm out, it's pretty much we don't have a show because I have the key to get in the building. I have the computer. I have all the equipment. So when I can't be here, then the show sort of comes to a standstill.
It's kind of a flaw in our whole system.
Yeah, exactly. So I've been out at the state fair for the last 2 weeks. The Libertarian Party of Indiana, for the first time ever, had a booth out at the state fair, and it was an enormous success. Rupert was gone 4 of the 17 days, but he still signed over 7,000 autographs. And each one of those people who came through the line were asked if they were registered to vote, if they wanted to sign up for more materials, yard signs, more information, if they wanted to donate to Rupert's campaign. And we registered 132 people, and we had more sign-up sheets. I would say that in the 4 years I've been executive director, in the 2 weeks we were at the state fair, I probably had double or triple the amount of sign-up sheets I've had the entire time I've been the executive director. I mean, it was incredible. So we handed out every piece of Gary Johnson material in the state of Indiana. We handed out over 10,000 pieces for Rupert. We handed out a ton of materials for our other candidates. So it was really successful, but it also meant that we had about 5 to 10 volunteers a day out at the booth from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., for 17 days straight, and I was the one running the volunteer effort, so there just was no way for me to get away, even, you know, those few days. So I was out there 16 to the 17 days, and the thought of coming and talking about news and policy, yeah. I needed a salad and a nap at the end of it. Something
a salad?
Something green after all the fried food that I had to eat, and then a nap, and I'm finally recovered, but it meant that we had to go on hiatus for a couple weeks, so that is my fault. I did get a note from a few of you, a few angry people. One was about our Chick-fil-A episode, and I don't agree with our guest either, but and the others were, "Where the heck are you? I need my entertainment." I was like, "Well, then you might want to try a different podcast."
Yeah. So,
but
I mean, there's really so many more out there. I mean,
Mike O'Meara show, the Don Geronimo show, Adam Carolla. I mean, come on. So, but hey, we sell ourselves short on this podcast. We are a solid B podcast. So let's not sell ourselves
solid
short.
B minus,
B plus. So
I feel like Statler and Waldorf would love our show. After every episode, we could just play some Statler and Waldorf, and it'd be like exactly how I feel about it.
Excellent,
time.
Wonderful. Okay, all right.
It
terrible.
Was good. It was awful. it was terrible.
Now school is starting. Correct. When is school starting over at IEPY?
School started last Monday.
Okay, that's what I thought.
This past Monday.
So you guys are back on the swing of things. So we had for the first, you know, it's kind of incredible. We've done this almost for half a year.
I know.
This is about 25 weeks.
I mean, we started it during my second semester last year.
Right.
At some point. I don't remember when.
I know. And so we've typically met on Thursdays, and today we're actually meeting on a Saturday, which we decided to meet at 11 o'clock on Saturday to record the podcast. We started at roughly 11:45, and we have not heard from Chris Galt yet.
But that's such a common story with this podcast. It's like, oh, we're going to start at 11. 12:30, let's get started.
It's true. I'm like, now listen, guys, we need to be there right at 11 o'clock. I have many things to do after the podcast today. And then I text him, hey, I know it's 11:15, but I'm running a little behind. YOLO. So we'll see you soon. So we're not really sure where Chris Galt is at. Maybe he'll stumble in here unshowered,
yeah,
unshaven.
We'll probably get some random phone call here halfway through. I just woke up, man.
I forgot, guys. But it's fine. It was sort of, hey, what about Thursday? That's not going to work. I can do it at Thursday at 8 a.m. And I said, well, all right, Friday it is. And then you're like, oh, I'm going to be at DePaul day. How about Saturday? So,
and that was exhausting.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about being at a booth all day.
Right.
That's what we were doing yesterday from like noon till 9 o'clock.
Trying to set up a DePaul party for
the DePaul chapter of Yale. The other state chair from IU went up there or went over there, and it was just basically power tabling. I mean, it was table up, and we talked. I mean, we had to have talked to everybody on that campus because we were there for so long.
I am one of three people who can drive Rupert's RV. So I have, after the podcast, I have to drive the RV. I have to head up, get the RV. Because Rupert has a wrapped RV. You can find it on his Facebook page, Rupert Bonham, like Boneham, and you can see the pictures. But I'm driving it up to Woofstock, some sort of dog thing up at the Palladium at Carmel. So it just makes me a little happy that we'll be tabling at the Palladium in Carmel, the Libertarian Party will be. So it's sort of ironic. I feel your pain. That's really – I have sunburns, which for me – I look like ham. When I sunburn, I don't really get tan. I just sort of look like...
Yeah, I'm the same way. There is no tan for me. You're either white or you're red.
You're ham-like. So it is the season of tabling. If you do not have a sunburn by election day and you're in politics, then you didn't work hard enough. That's really the truth of it. So.
It really is. I mean, we got lucky. We were able to... I mean, it's not really luck. Since DePaul red tape... is you have to be a registered student organization to be in their activities fair, which is why we picked yesterday, because that's their activities fair. And so we couldn't get in the activities fair, which was outside. But we were allowed to set up a table in the cafeteria area all day, which it might have worked out in our favor because it was so hot yesterday. But we were inside in the AC all day, but... I mean, that activities fair was right outside the door, and we couldn't.
So if you are listening and you are a college student, which really this is sort of who we gear the podcast. We gear the podcast because we're all under 30. We gear the podcast towards people under 30, so those over 30 are not disappointed in the content. So if you're a college student and you're interested in starting a campus organization for one of the fine libertarian organizations that do not sponsor this podcast, get in touch with Creighton, and Creighton and Chris can help you get set up. And I think I have a couple contacts that I need to talk to you about. Lauren, my intern, she's going back to Ball State, so she's ready to get started up there. And I know we've talked for over a year now about starting a Ball State organization.
There's a chapter behind Ball State.
Excellent.
Nick Newland is the president. Melissa Lucas is one of the main members that I've had in contact with. So from what I understand, I mean, I haven't heard much from them this semester, but they did some stuff last semester.
Poor Lauren. We've done this, like we've said, for over 25 weeks. She was in here over 20 hours a week. And every Thursday, you want me to come on the podcast? Oh, yeah, next week. And now her internship has ended, and now she's up at Ball State, and we never actually got her on the podcast, so I'll have to make it right at some point. But watching her argue with Creighton before and after the podcast, oh my gosh.
Speaking of which, Ayn Rand is back in the news.
Is she?
Yes, she is, because apparently our new... maybe possible vice president of the United States is apparently, and this is news to me, a disciple of the Ayn Rand philosophy.
Oh, he's a huge Ayn Rand fanboy.
I mean, Ayn Rand, I remember in Atlas Shrugged when on like page 150, she said, the most noble thing in your life is to take money from people and give it to big banks who've screwed up and bail them out of making mistakes. I remember that was at the top of her philosophy list. So
I've never read any of her stuff, but I'm kind of guessing that wasn't in there.
No.
All right, so let's get started with a real show. It's been 10 minutes of filler hoping that Chris Galt walks in the door, but that's probably not going to happen. So let's start with We've just missed so much in 2 weeks. I mean, it's been 2 or 3 weeks since we've done a show, so...
I know, it's kind of funny. You don't realize how much stuff happens
how much
in 2 weeks
stuff.
Until you do something where you have to talk about it.
If we miss the next 2 weeks, think of all that we'd miss with the conventions. I mean, and we really only have, like, 4 or 5 shows to the election.
Yeah,
I mean,
the convention news might just be that they all got blown away.
I know. It's an illegitimate hurricane, so which is also something that we didn't even talk about, which we could talk about. That joker in Missouri. So let's start with Paul Ryan. So, Creighton, what is your opinion of Romney's pick for vice president, Paul Ryan?
I don't know. I never really liked the guy. I mean, he always just kind of tried to get presented as this, you know, stalwart of, you know, hardcore real conservatism and maybe libertarianism because he read Ayn Rand when he was younger. And that's why he got into politics. It's like, it's the same thing I say about every politician. It's like, how do they vote? And Paul Ryan votes like every other stupid Republican in Congress. And, I mean, that's really the end of it. It's just not that good because he votes terrible.
He talks a really good game. He's like most Republicans. He talks a game that makes a libertarian look at him and go, all right, he's on the right track. But his votes, you know, he's sort of one of those people that finds Jesus right around the election time. And I don't mean like, I'm sure you've found it multiple times, but I'm saying politically found Jesus. You know, when it comes to an election, then he's a hardcore libertarian and he has all these libertarian principles. But then when TARP comes up and some of these other major votes
there's all these memes that were flying around the internet about how he's a libertarian. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous that, I mean, apparently, you know, the Tea Party, I mean, if anyone could consider the Tea Party as starting from either one or two pieces of legislation, it's TARP and Obamacare. And, I mean, the guy voted for TARP.
Right.
Immediately should tell everybody he's not, you know, a Tea Party supporter. I mean, he voted for TARP.
As I was getting my daily news on Reddit through memes, I saw a picture of Romney and Ryan standing there, and it said, "Dear 2012 Tea Party, these are the guys that the 2008 Tea Party warned you about." So... You know, if you want a rebuttal, okay, because it's easy for us to sit here and criticize these guys, but let's give you a rebuttal. So go to Google and Google in Chard Reed, Chard Reed, Chard Reed. He's running for Congress as a Libertarian here in Indiana in the 5th District in the seat currently held by Dan Burton. And he and our United States Senate candidate Andrew Horning have put out. It's been a soft launch so far. It's called The Road to Reality. It's a plan that is an alternative, a libertarian alternative to the federal government, to the Ryan budget, the Ryan Romney budget. And you know, Chard Reed has actually been very critical of Paul Ryan, saying that you know his budget, While it is a start down the right path, it's not a true road to reality. And you know, Andy Horning and Chard Reed have put out this plan called The Road to Reality that counters that budget and shows a true path to fiscal responsibility. So check out Chard Reed, his website. I think it's chardreed.com, but it's probably safer just to Google Chard Reed. And look up The Road to Reality, and that is a plan put together by a libertarian congressional candidate that is fiscally sound. Now, when you look at it, you're going to go, whoa, okay, we're eliminating this, we're eliminating that. Well, yeah, because a lot of it is unconstitutional, unnecessary, and wasteful spending. So check that out. That's something that I wanted to mention.
Just a nice little quote on Paul Ryan here from Reason Magazine. In the Bush years, Ryan voted for everything. No Child Left Behind, the Medicare drug entitlement, housing subsidies, unemployment benefits extension, the bank bailouts, and the 2008 subsidies to failing Chrysler and GM. In voting for TARP, Ryan said, "Madam Speaker, this bill offends my principles, but I'm going to vote for this bill in order to preserve my principles." Which, I mean, if there's anything that even comes close to the Bush, I broke the principles of the free market to save the free market. I mean, this guy's just a tool. He's just another, and he's just picked because he has this image of conservatism on him. And I don't know. I don't know what Romney's whole idea with this is. I mean,
oh, I'll tell you what it is. I think I find Republican politics. Now, I'm not saying conservative philosophy or a conservative, you know, the sort of the George Will area of the conservative movement or National Review or any of that to be shallow. But I find most Republican Party politics to be incredibly shallow. I don't know how many times as a Republican, the most dominant phrase I heard as a Republican was, Republicans have the best looking women. It was never, we have the best ideas.
They'll show pictures of like Nancy Pelosi and some Democrats, right? You know, like this is why everyone, all women should vote conservative or Republican. Give me a break.
Right. If you look at the gubernatorial candidates right now releasing a response to a request by Mitch Daniels on the American, on the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. And I'd like you to go and look up what Mike Pence sent to the governor, Governor Daniels, and what Rupert Boneham sent to Governor Daniels, the two approaches. And if you look at Mike Pence's response on how Indiana should handle Obamacare and its implementation here in Indiana, it's full of shallowness, it's full of talking points, and it's just this idea that, oh, well, we're going to get a supermajority in Congress and it's going to get repealed. Well, I'm sure we said that about Medicare in the late 60s. So let's come up with a plan. Did you hear from our buddy Chris Galt? Or
somebody woke up.
Okay. and hold
yo,
on. Let me...
podcast right on my way. Those are four separate messages.
He'll be here right at the end. So maybe we'll extend it a little bit. But so if you look at what Mike Pence sent, it's, you know, he calls it Obamacare throughout. It's hyperbolic. It's lacking in serious ideas on how to truly implement Obamacare through the lens of what a conservative or a libertarian or those on the right would view Obamacare. He supposes that it will be repealed. Well, that's not how Rupert Boneham approached it. He approached it with, okay, let's spend a couple months researching this. Let's figure out how we can give Hoosiers the most control and the least amount of risk. And, you know, the two approaches, when you look at the two letters, are striking. One is very shallow. One is thoughtful. And I think that's why libertarians do really well in debates with Republicans. It's because they give a lot of thought to what they're talking about. It's
usually,
not just talking
about. Yeah, they know what they're talking about more. I can't even count how many times, you know, at least tabling on campus, you know, one of the things that, you know, being an issue only, you know, a nonpartisan group like Yale is, you know, when you're based upon ideas, you kind of have to know the ideas, you know, you kind of have to understand, you know, the ideas that we're trying to promote. So that's one thing we do a lot is when we're tabling, you know, people come up and ask us particular things. It's like, it's just amazing how they'll come up with this almost like, you know, I know this because I follow Republican politics, or I know all this, and then we'll come up and they don't know what the heck they're even talking about. They're talking about something else. They're complaining about something that hasn't even happened or is something totally different issue. And then, you know, it's amazing to me. And I mean, debates are always easy because no one knows what the heck they're talking
about. Right. It's full of talking points. And I think Democrats in a lot of ways are the same, are within the same thread. And I know we sound like elitist a-holes, but I think if you pay attention from a libertarian perspective, you sort of just feel this way. And maybe this makes us, you know, arrogant or whatever, but it's just, this is why I ended up becoming a libertarian, because I was a Republican who the deepest thought I put into politics was what was repeated to me over and over by Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we did at the tabling thing yesterday was one of the big things we try and always do it when we're doing tabling is point out the difference between the or to point out that there is more than just, you know, left and right. That's one of the things we try and do. And when you get people to think about it from a perspective other than things that have been traditionally thought of as Republican and traditionally thought of as Democrat or liberal and conservative or whatever, when people start looking at it from the perspective of government involvement in your life to less government involvement in your life, you know, no force to a lot of force over your personal life and your economic life, they begin to kind of see where you're coming from.
Right.
And it kind of, and it, to me, it seems like it makes more sense to them. Because, I mean, I've seen a number of posts on the national blog, the Young Americans for Liberty national blog, where, you know, they'll post, people will get emails from other kids on campus, like, what does your organization stand for? How can you be against or against abortion, but also against welfare? Or, I mean, so, you know, right, they're mixing these traditionally Democrat things with these traditionally Republican things, and people do, but once you get them to understand, you know, you're talking about government involvement, period. They kind of understand where you're coming, and I think it makes a lot more sense. I mean, everyone always says that the libertarian philosophy is one of, is probably the only logical, as far as like
it's consistent,
consistent across the board, and all that kind of stuff. So
it's why we had almost 500 people take the quiz at the state fair. I mean, people walk up, and actually, the funny thing is, with the world's smallest political quiz, it was mostly centrists and libertarians. We had very few conservatives at the state fair. We had more liberals at the state fair. Which you could have, I wouldn't have guessed in a million years. But, you know, when I started to be challenged by people like Abdul and by Andy Horning, Abdul Shabazz here in Indianapolis, when I started to be challenged by those guys and the shallowness of my arguments just couldn't hold up to their, you know, logical questions, that's when I started to look for something different. That's when I found Ron Paul and the Libertarian Party. And, you know, so I think, to bring it back, this is why I think Paul Ryan is popular, because Paul Ryan is an intellectual bright spot in a party that is fairly shallow in its thinking a lot of times. I think the majority of the people in the Republican Party, I'm not saying all Republicans or all conservatives, I'm saying a majority of people who don't give serious thought to the issues, they just think on the shallowness of it. So when somebody like Paul Ryan comes out with a plan that has actual facts and figures, everybody goes, oh, water in the desert.
Yeah. No, and I think that goes for both parties, too. I mean, if you look at the whole Elizabeth Warren thing, where, you know, Democrats, I mean, I'm not going to say all Democrats are all, you know, quote, liberals.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say they all follow this pattern, but they tend to be more focused on the, you know, the emotional aspects. And I know that's a talking point that people hear a lot, but I mean, it is kind of true. A lot of it has to do with like the imagery of, you know, helping the poor through the welfare state. I mean, the conservatives don't hate the poor because they don't want to take your money, or libertarians don't hate the poor because they don't want to take your money to give it to
them. It's why you're hearing the word optics about these conventions a lot. Have you ever heard the word optics before? Which is how something visually looks at the conventions.
Yeah. So Elizabeth Warren comes along, and when all these arguments are kind of dependent upon the emotional imagery that is involved around a particular idea, Elizabeth Warren comes along and starts giving, like, you know, quasi-philosophical, you know, justifications for this stuff is how I, at least that's how I felt like what she was doing with the whole Rhodes thing, which Obama just ate up and repeated, where, you know, every economics, it's like, it's almost like it's economics or something. She's an economist now because, you know, public roads, everyone pays for that, they travel, you know, this whole argument, and people ate it up, and it's like, yeah, she's really popular because she's making our philosophy somehow make sense, when, I mean, after 5 seconds of poking and prodding, it doesn't make any sense. But yeah, then she became like a superstar because of that kind of stuff. And then Obama ate it up, and now he's becoming more of a superstar than he was because of this this, you know, quasi philosophical justification for their legislation that they have. And I mean, the same thing's happening with Paul Ryan. I mean, he has these talking points that are a little bit more, I'd say, I don't know what, specific, a little bit more robust than, say, mm-hmm. you know, Hope and Change, or, you know, America, or just some, you know, random, you know, chest bumping word. So, but at the same time, it's really, it is just a front. I mean, he isn't any different than pretty much any Republican in Washington right now.
Yeah.
And he votes the same way. All he's doing is, I mean, he's a jester.
I think the answer really comes down to everybody has to challenge everybody a little bit more. And the problem is that we are so busy in this society that we don't want to be challenged more. And I think that's why we see the shallowness within all parties. And there is, in the Libertarian Party and the Libertarian movement as well, there are people that sometimes say things that I look and go, you just heard somebody else repeat that. Like, you just heard Ron Paul say that five times, so now you're repeating it. I think it's because we're so busy, we don't want to take the time to research it. We have other jobs, we have other lives, we have wives and kids, and I think we just have to challenge each other more a little bit and do it in a way that is civil, in a way that is respectful. Just because someone has a letter next to their name, it doesn't mean that you have to hate them. But I think the media has to start challenging and stop falling for just photo ops. I think, you know, we have to test each other, challenge people within our own party. You know, the 11th commandment in the Republican Party is part of the problem. You can't challenge another Republican because it'll break Reagan's supposed, oh, never talk bad about another Republican rule. Well, that's the worst thing that could happen. You know, as people on the right, libertarians and conservatives, we believe in competition. We believe in the battle of ideas. That's what makes you sharper. But, you know, if you don't challenge each other and you just attack someone who challenges you, then I guess you're not really going to grow in your philosophy. So, because politics is a discussion.
One of the conservative icons of the 20th century, Bill Buckley. I mean, he had a TV show for, you know, how long, where all he did was debate with various intellectual thinkers.
Right.
Or politicians across the board, Republican, Democrat, or otherwise. And that was all he did. He would just talk to him. And he was like, he's considered as like one of the icons of conservatism in the 20th century. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that was his whole model, was just, you know, discussion. I mean, how many times have we ever seen have you ever seen him discuss with, or what's his name? The linguist guy. He's like, he calls himself a libertarian socialist now.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, God, he's a linguist. He's a leftist.
Oh, Lakoff.
No, it's
not George Lakoff.
No. God, what's his name?
Or as Rush Limbaugh calls him, George Lakoff rhymes with. I think
I'll look it up.
That's part of the problem is we confuse speed and mass consumables in news as the same as quality, you know. But heck, would I rather sit there and watch 5 minutes of CNN and get all the news for the day, or would I rather watch an hour of Charlie Rose to hear one subject? Charlie Rose is like watching paint dry, you know.
Noam Chomsky. Okay, yeah. Yeah, that was really, I mean, he's not a Republican or anything, but he's a
no. Noam Chomsky is yeah.
But he's very. It was a very very, you know, you would think you were watching, you know, some collegiate review kind of thing. It was very hardcore, very in-depth. But that was Bill Buckley's thing. And no one ever said Bill Buckley had, you know, wasn't conservative. I mean, ever.
Well, let's move on to a more legitimate subject and talk about Representative Todd Akin. And I saw a meme as we move from talking about how shallow our politics is to, I saw a meme today, and it basically was a photo that had essentially the same quotes as Todd Akin, but it's been said by other Republicans throughout history. If I can find it, I will post it on, I think I saw it on Reddit. I'll post it on our Facebook page. If you want to go to the Facebook page, just go to wearelibertarians.com. And also, let me say earlier in the show, before we move on to Todd Akin fully, I want to thank the folks that carry our show other than the podcast.lpin.org, which is where you can find the podcasts of the show. You can find it on our Facebook, but you can also find it on Stitcher, which is a podcasting app that most people have. You can also listen to us on Liberty Osmosis, which is a libertarian streaming channel, and they play our shows mostly. The channel is us streaming live, and you can also find us at Rivertown Radio. And they have started carrying the show too. So we have moved on to three other networks.
Moving
so,
on up.
I know. So
all we do is talk about crap.
I know, and make fun of each other.
Yeah.
But hey, it works. So Todd Akin, I want
that guy's funny, isn't he?
It is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard in my life.
You know, he just reminds me, after everything I've seen and how he's kind of reacted, he just reminds me of like that, I mean, I'm sure that's not, and this is not an accurate description, but it's like that innocent old man who just does, what? What?
Like, You know, Huckabee, I think Mike Huckabee is the only one to come out and actually defend him to some extent. And his defense was essentially, you know, hey, we're a party of pro-life. How could we abandon this guy? Yes, his wound was self-inflicted, but it was not intentionally self-inflicted. It was a dumb accident, and we ought to forgive the guy and move on. Now, I don't know. What do you think about that attitude that Huckabee has? That, hey, it was a slip of the tongue. Let's give the guy a break, and let's move on.
I mean, I think he can do whatever he wants. So he won the primary. He wants to keep running, let him keep running. I mean, if anyone wants to disassociate themselves with him, then that's perfectly fine, and I wouldn't see why they wouldn't. But as far as, like, giving advice for people to hate to I don't know. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he still wins.
He went from winning to down 10 points. He dropped like 12 points and he's down 10 now. So, you know, the McCaskills, if I have the family correct, Claire McCaskill, her husband was in Congress and he died in a plane crash shortly before the election. And then she ran in his place and was elected and has, you know, the McCaskills have been in politics in Missouri for a very long time. So it's sort of like the Carson family in Indiana, you know, where it's just sort of a seat gifted to the next family member. So they're not terribly popular there in Missouri because they just always keep, you know, the McCaskill name is always prevalent. You know, so it was probably going to be the time for the McCaskill name to move on. And it probably, I don't know this for sure, but if I'm guessing, he was not winning because he was so awesome. He was winning because he was running against a McCaskill. And people felt like they've been in power long enough, let's move on. So once he finally gets noticed, then it's like, oh, no. So, 'cause people weren't really probably paying attention to who he was. Now, I'm making all of that up off the top of my head, so I may be totally incorrect. You don't come to this podcast for facts, I hope. So... you come here for uninformed opinion, but I'm guessing that is probably the case. This guy steps in it, people actually start to take a look. You know, and there is a very real anti-social conservative sentiment in this country. If you are a social conservative and one of your two top issues is gay marriage or abortion, the majority of independents and liberals, they just want nothing to do with you.
Yeah, I mean, from the way it sounds, is he thought he heard some doctor somewhere say this or tell him this. And, you know, that's just a hard-learned fact he has now is that, you know, you don't repeat things you think you might have heard somewhere from somebody.
Like I just did
politics.
About the McCaskills, but yeah. I'm not running for office.
Yeah, so if you think you heard something somewhere at some point about something, don't say it in politics because it's probably wrong and you're probably going to lose as a result.
Yeah. And especially when it comes to social conservatism. I mean, people just do not. I mean, I listen to Howard Stern a lot, and Howard Stern is a person that you would think is a liberal, and he's fairly liberal, but he could vote either way. He was actually supporting John McCain for president in 2008 over Barack Obama until he chose Sarah Palin. Mm-hmm. And then he switched to voting for Obama and supporting Obama. And, you know, it was just because Sarah Palin, her main, you know, she was a social conservative. She was very proud of it, very open about it. And it's not, I guess it's not something that you hide. But, you know, I would consider someone like a Howard Stern an independent-minded person who is going to vote for a more progressive Republican as long as they stay off of the social issues. I also think that's why Mitt Romney chose Paul Ryan. While Paul Ryan is a social conservative, Paul Ryan's thrust is in economics. And Mitt Romney wants the election to be about the economy. You know, with the pick of Paul Ryan, he keeps his base, but he also is able to keep the discussion on the economy because he has picked an economically focused Republican. You know, if he had picked Mitch Daniels, it would have been the same way. Mitch Daniels says all the time, like, we need to get past the social issues and not worry about that a lot right now. We need to focus on the economy. You know, to which people like Mike Pence say, eh, you're wrong. So,
yeah. No, I mean, I don't know. I do think that social conservatism is leaving a lot. I think a lot of, I mean, when we say social conservatism, conservative.
So
when we say that, I mean, essentially we just mean, because I mean, social conservative doesn't really kind of make sense when you look at the history of conservatism. I mean, what it's come to mean is like evangelical lifestyle. And I think that has a lot to do with What's-His-Face, who ran for president back in the early 90s.
Yeah, Pat Robertson and the Moral Majority, they basically, it has, and we'll talk about this in just a second, but Pat Robertson and the evangelicals were, you know, the Ron Paul libertarians are trying to take a page out of their playbook and flex some muscles.
Yeah, and I think a lot of what modern understanding of social conservatism means is because of him. But I mean, for the most part, the social aspects of conservative, as far as like the history of the philosophy and whatnot, with like Russell Kirk and all this, is pretty much just like, you know, you have to be, you know, Christian. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to be Pat Robertson Christian. It just means, you know, kind of religious in a traditional American sense is what they meant. And evangelical Christians are not, I mean, and you know, if they're listening, you're going to hate me for saying this, but your understanding, your interpretation of the Bible is not the historically, you know, prevalent interpretation of it. So, you know, the Pat Robertson understanding of what the Bible says is not necessarily what conservatives have always stood for. But that being said, social conservatism has come to mean essentially that evangelical understanding of social issues. So it's been primarily, you know, anti-gay marriage, anti-gay, really. No abortions. I mean, pretty much anything that you can attribute to evangelical. And I know that a lot of people would say that that's, you know, kind of dumb, or that's a misrepresentation. But for the most part, that's where this whole conception of social conservatism today has come from. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of evangelical thrust from the early 90s. Because, I mean, for the most part, I mean, if you look at Republicans at least, but conservatives throughout the 20th century, they weren't all, you know, representative of this philosophy. They were more or less just kind of like moral, but they focused on the distinction between big government and small government. They didn't really try and say that you have to have government support, you know, a certain particular. You didn't use government to infringe on people's rights because they were socially different than you. That wasn't really something that isn't the message they tried to push.
Yeah, and to give some historical perspective, most presidents were Unitarians or Congregationalists, including people like Jefferson, who did read the Bible daily, like John Adams, who did read the Bible daily. But
Jefferson rewrote his own version of the Bible that took the miracles out.
Right, and some would say that this applies to Barack Obama today, and it was an issue in Howard Taft's election. And, you know, Congregationalists and Unitarians place a greater emphasis on the teachings of Christ, but less emphasis on the deity of Christ. And evangelicals place a greater emphasis on the deity of Christ and sometimes less on the moral teachings. And Howard Taft in the 1908 election was accused of not being a Christian, and it was a huge issue to the point that Teddy Roosevelt had to come out and say, listen, guys, he's a Unitarian. He lives the Christian principles. He just is not that big on the deity of Christ, you know. And for most of our presidents have been Episcopalians, Methodists. They've been Unitarians, Congregationalists. It wasn't until Jimmy Carter came out as an evangelical in the famous Playboy interview, ironically, you know, that I have lust in my heart. He came out as an evangelical that sort of started to become a driving force. You know, even Bill Clinton was one of the most evangelical presidents we've had. He used religious references all the time. Most of them were, oh, God. But so it is sort of a modern phenomenon that we have, and it started really with Pat Robertson in the 88 election running for president, and the evangelicals, because of the Reagan Revolution, because of, you know, Jimmy Carter's growth, they really wanted to flex some muscle. So people like Falwell,
and they did. And look, I mean, that's exactly where it's all coming from.
And if you are not a Christian that believes in the Nicene and the Apostolic Creeds and an evangelical Christian, you have a tough time in the Republican Party. And
you have a tough time nowadays proving that you're even Christian.
Right.
If you're not evangelical, you're not even considered Christian anymore in some places.
Right. Oh, completely. And so that's actually one of the ironic things about a Mormon being, most evangelical circles consider that to be a major cult. They also consider the Catholic Church to be a cult, of which Paul Ryan is a member. So it is sort of ironic to me that, you know, they've made such a huge deal, the social conservatives, out of evangelical Christianity, and then their saviors are a Mormon and a Catholic.
Yeah, and that's probably why. I mean, I think what's happening is that, you know, it's starting to wane, that their influence, at least. And that's a lot of America is kind of revolting against this, you know, Victorian lifestyle that they have always tried to push. And they're also, and the fact that, you know, their standard bearer in the primary didn't win is just testament to that. I mean, thank God. But, Pennsylvania.
Santorum.
Santorum. God damn.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hey. Seven Hail Marys right now.
Just edit that one out.
Mary Mother, full of grace.
So, Rick Santorum, who may have been Catholic, but I mean, as far as standing up for evangelical, like, tradition.
The poster child.
Oh, my God. So, but he didn't win. He didn't get, I mean, he got a little bit of a push, which, I mean, I could have read from the beginning wasn't going to last. But, yeah, I mean, he didn't win. And I don't think that would have, I mean, he didn't, the evangelical, like Pat Robertson didn't win either. But, I mean, he didn't represent the whole, like, strength of it that I thought. I mean, look at Bush. I mean, compassionate conservatism,
I think
all this kind of stuff. Reborn,
right.
Christian, and all this kind of stuff.
And I would say that, you know, I am an evangelical Christian. But I'm also a libertarian, and I have no problem with the two, because I don't want Sharia law controlling our politics, I don't want my faith controlling politics either. I want less government across the board, because that brings equality. Equality and justice are huge. And I think that when Christians use politics to try and further issues that are soul matters, it just does a disservice to not only politics, the country, but also the church.
Yeah.
And I think you look at the gay marriage issue with our generation, gay marriage and the emphasis on that being the cardinal sin within America today, that issue has not only destroyed the Republican Party for our generation, it's also destroyed the Christian church and the evangelical church, I should be more specific. And it is led to greater biblical illiteracy within our society. And it's almost, you go in places like Reddit or 4chan and say you're a Christian. Ooh, okay, all right, sorry, I'm an atheist. I give.
Yeah, you know? It's really just, I feel like, you know, the fact, bringing it back to Haken, you know, the guy is saying something like as stupid. I mean, give me a break. A few things I've ever heard as stupid as what he said, you know. A legitimate rape,
and your body will reject.
I mean, give me a break. I mean, there is no way. Whatever. Anyway, but the thing is that something said as stupid as that has become equated with what social conservatives would believe.
That, right.
Like, people, a lot of people, are like, well, that just must be what social conservatives believe.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're not. I mean, they're not making the distinction between the fact that this guy just said something really, really dumb that a lot of people think is dumb. But no, a lot of people think that, well, that's what social conservatives believe. And I really think it's just a showing of how there's a large rejection of the social conservative philosophy in America. And I mean, you kind of had to see it coming. It was only a matter of time. But yeah, I think as the next generation, you know, comes of age, you know, we're going to hear more and more than any generation ever from our elders, you know, you kids are evil and rah, 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 you guys don't have any morals anymore.
So if Todd Akin, the Republican Party and the people of Missouri want Todd Akin to get out of the race, but he stays in, is that an illegitimate election?
No, I don't know. Maybe only if they reject him.
Velociraptor.
If they reject him, it'll be legitimate.
So yeah, I think I couldn't agree more. Hey,
look who's here!
I've been trying to call you to get in for like 20 minutes now.
You didn't call me,
Chris Galt here.
You didn't call me.
Yeah,
have a seat, buddy.
No, you didn't.
I called you like 5 times.
I have no missed calls.
You are legitimately late. Hey, you got a laptop,
and I have a signal. Yeah. I have no missed
recording
calls
still.
And a signal.
That's neat.
Transformer.
All right, well, okay, hold on. We're going to take a break. We're going to get Chris Galt situated here. And
something tells me this is going
to
be on the
Easter. Are we in a hurry to record this week?
Yeah, we didn't wait for you.
Yeah.
Obviously.
There's like 15 minutes left, but we'll go a little long.
Well, we can just stick all this in the Easter egg.
Exactly. That's what she said. All right, are you going to close the door there, Shecky? Thanks.
I thought you were taking a break.
No, we're not taking a break. So,
where are you at? Let me.
Hey, nice shirt.
I just
by
got
the way.
All of your
nice shirt to you too.
All of your messages. Yo, podcast right on my way. Let me in. Where are you at?
It is 12:30.
I've been trying to get in.
It's been an hour and a half.
I mean, I know I was late.
Where the hell have you been, son?
I still had to wait outside.
Okay. For an hour and a half.
No, I thought you said 11:30 anyway.
Oh,
and I'm assuming this is a text message from you.
So I thought I was like a half hour late. It was 10:30.
What time did you wake up?
I don't know.
Be honest.
I was on my tablet, not paying attention.
Reddit strikes again, huh?
So.
Yeah, we started at 11:45. Okay. So we were way late too. So we're not disciplined. So far we've talked about Paul Ryan and we've talked about Todd Akin. So let's go to Chris Galt and let's ask Chris Galt what his thoughts are on Paul Ryan.
All right, my thoughts on Paul Ryan. Well, I think it is a great choice for Mitt Romney. I think they fit perfectly together. Romney Ryan sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can tell it was strategically thought out.
Strategery.
I think it was a classic Republican pick. They've been promoting him pretty hard all last year with his budget plan, even though it wasn't anything special, you know, just getting his name out there. And I can see how this got set up as a pick. My personal opinions of the man are not very much less than Mitt Romney himself.
But he's the great savior.
I mean, he's not. And anybody who tells you he's libertarian is lying.
Oh,
so
throwing down the gauntlet, walking right in, 2 minutes in, and he's throwing down the gauntlet. Let's hear it.
I've been told on Facebook several times now that Paul Ryan is a libertarian, so we should vote for Romney.
Have you seen the meme? Where it's got all the people and laughing with the cigars, and they're laughing like crazy, and it says, and then we told them Ryan was a libertarian.
I mean, anyone who's educated can tell that Romney is not a libertarian.
Right.
So, I mean, he's
more of that libertarian arrogance showing through today.
He seems more conservative to me than Mitt Romney, if I can say that.
Well,
I think
because
Romney's
I believe
liberal.
That Paul Ryan has principles, and Mitt Romney is.
Haven't you read Atlas Shrugged? I mean, what chapter? Isn't there a chapter where they talk about how you should consolidate public schools to pass something similar to No Child Left Behind if you ever get elected? I mean, I remember that. That was one of Hank Reardon's like biggest things.
You've not read Atlas Shrugged?
I've only seen it. I was being facetious. Have you read it?
I have, no. Please, are you kidding? That book is so long and it has no pictures.
Actually,
I'll probably
read it someday. I have it.
Listen,
wait a minute.
On We Are Libertarians, we leave the reading to Creighton.
I just caught that.
I read some books.
You give me all this stuff
about
how awesome Atlas Shrugged the movie is, and you've never read the book?
Right.
We leave reading to you.
What is the?
I never said the book is good. I've said the movie's good.
If I want to read a book, I will read your blog.
Yeah. I got to keep up on that. I've been trying to make it through the entire book before I start posting.
If you
and
read
that's a
Creighton's
idea,
blog on
book.
How, on the, what was the econ book you did?
Economics One Lesson?
Yes.
Henry Hazlitt.
That would take you as long to read your blog post about as it would the entire book.
No, it wouldn't.
No, not really. What is your URL, by the way?
Metaphysical Specs. .blogspot.com.
Jeez, just Google that.
Well, it's just thoughts, insights, and metaphysical speculations. Have you ever heard people say that?
No.
No? You never? Well, anyway. People.
Again, we don't read.
People do say that sometimes.
Was it on Reddit?
No. They joking. Like, you never had... whatever. Anyway, that's the name of it. So, cool. Blogger makes your URLs.
.blogspot.
So, back to Paul Ryan. That's how I feel about Paul Ryan. I don't know what you guys said, but
pretty much the exact same thing. Yeah,
I was disappointed.
Well, who did you think he was going to pick?
I mean, Ron Paul. Know. I thought it would be someone.
It was Ron Paul's time.
I don't know. I would have liked to see Sarah Palin again.
Why? So he'd
I
lose?
I just want to hear. Yeah,
he'd lose anyway. Yeah. Gary Johnson.
But I wanted to make it more funny.
Yeah, it would have been. It would have been pretty cool to show how ridiculous the leadership of the Republican Party is.
Right
now, they're just trying to basically throw a bone to the Tea Party section without, you know, having any substance. It's just all talk.
Did you see Jon Stewart this week, where Sarah Palin is like, "I just can't believe the civility of this election, eh? This is such an uncivil election." And then they go back and show her.
Why does your Canadian Alaskan accent sound like a little Irishman?
Oh, look at me, little.
Oh, look at your lucky charms.
I'm going to run under the rainbow to find
a
little lucky
change.
Moose.
I'm a little short.
Oh, my God. I shall rush off from my house. And basically they went back and showed her as vice president. He's paddling around with terrorists, eh? So.
All right, so what was the second thing we talked about?
The second was social conservatism and Todd Akin and his illegitimate comments.
I don't know what he said. Tell me.
Oh, my God.
Really?
You are
the illegitimate rape.
When was it?
When you get raped?
It was like this past week. He said that if a girl gets...
From talking to several doctors.
If it's a legitimate rape, the body shuts down and no pregnancy results. It was about abortion, because people say, what if somebody gets pregnant and they want to abort it because they got raped? And he said, in relation to that, well, from what I understand, if it's a legitimate rape, the body shuts down and no pregnancy can result.
Which, that strain of thought, I mean, Sarah Palin, Paul Ryan...
that's exactly what I said.
Sarah Palin, Paul Ryan, Todd Akin, they all...
You can't,
Rick Santorum.
How can you even talk about it?
They would all basically... If you have an abortion, you're going to jail. So even if it's incest or rape. What? Are you really...
Your grandfather clock? Is that your ringtone?
He's literally getting up and walking out of the podcast.
Dude, we are so professional.
He's literally, he got here 45 minutes into the podcast. It's a wrong number.
Cool. You're not getting paid this week.
Hey, I'm sorry, but when somebody calls you twice, usually it's...
When somebody calls you twice.
In a row?
See, we are so lucky to have Liberty Osmosis, Rivertown Radio, and Stitcher.
We are.
Radio station will ever have us.
Yes, we are we are so representing those.
Are we going to try and ever get on a radio station?
No, because you get up and walk out, and you're 45 minutes late, and then you get up and walk out in the middle of the podcast.
At some point, we'll just buy a tower.
Well, I was thinking
on top of the building here. Like, right, screw it.
Right. F the FCC.
Anyway, with this guy, I mean, there's nothing. There's no answer to this. The only answer is a meme that just is a guy shaking his head. Like,
no, that's exactly,
there's nothing you can do.
Oh, my God. It was
just like...
I mean, there's been some on Reddit where it was like, it showed a doctor and it said, if it's a legitimate rape, your body shuts down. Said no doctor ever.
What is an illegitimate rape? Like, that begs the question.
It's like getting raped and liking it.
I mean, I mean, it's just kind of crazy to me that someone could even, and regardless of conservative, social, whatever, that some person could honestly have it go through their head and believe that that was like, could happen. That is like a legitimate argument. That is,
I mean, and even if he thought that, why would he say that? Why would he say that?
I don't know.
Is he done? Is he gone?
No, he's actually not dropping out.
No, he's sticking in the race.
Everyone in the Republican Party told him, just drop out. And he said, no, I'm staying on. He won the primary.
Yeah, Reince Priebus, he told him to get out. Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan, they all told him. Sarah Palin told him to get out, and she believes the exact same thing.
Should run a Libertarian there against the Democrat.
You're cute. They're not going to let a Libertarian take over after
whole
that.
Creep. A libertarian in Missouri.
This is crap. This is crappy. It suddenly crept into like Chicago. Like, da Bears.
Da Bears.
All right.
So we talked about what we also, before we kind of use that to talk about, you know, how social conservatism. I can't say that word.
Social conservativism.
Okay. There's an extra syllable in there. I just don't want to pronounce.
Conservatism.
But anyway.
It's not that hard.
Anyway.
That's what she said.
We talked about how historically conservatives have not necessarily been equated with evangelical understanding or evangelical lifestyles, which is what social conservatism now really means. It's like if social conservative really just means evangelical in lifestyle, whereas historically conservatives were not always equated with that. They actually put more emphasis on the relation between the individual and the government in a more libertarian sense, because, I mean, Ludwig von Mises was an economist from the 20s, and he is actually one of the founders in America of, you know, the philosophy. I mean, I'm not going to say he is a
Chris Galt, just stop listening.
I'm not going to say he's a conservative. he's been a conservative juggernaut, but for the most part, his philosophy, his understanding of economics and his promotion of economics and how what economics kind of leads you to logically about your relation between the government and the people has been considered, you know, a conservative.
I love Ludwig von Mises, said no conservative ever.
No, that's not true. That's not true. Maybe if you talk about Rothbard, now you're talking about Rothbard, you hear that a lot. But when it comes to Mises himself, nowadays you're getting people revolting against that in the Republican Party.
We just talked about how shallow, you know, we talked about how shallow Republicans are. This is the most heard phrase at any Republican convention is, we've got the best looking girls.
America.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, America.
If you don't like America, you can get out.
I was a Republican for roughly 20 years before I became a libertarian. When I became a libertarian, that's when I heard of Ludwig von Mises. I heard of Russell Kirk. No, I heard of Schopenhauer.
Historically. And I'm again, we got to remember that we are living in a time where conservative has been it's morphing into something that has not historically been throughout the 20th century. As a result of the cold, as a result of like the end of the Cold War, the Pat Roberts and stuff, it's morphing. But I'm talking like Howard or Robert Taft, conservative, you know, early conservative in the 20th century, the old right essentially,
pretty large conservatives
had a
you
lot,
call me fat.
They had a lot of their
God, no.
their thought can be on economics. Is, I mean, Ludwig von Mises considered. Look at the Intercollegiate Studies Institute. They are founded by Bill Buckley was one of their founders, mm-hmm. and they pushed Ludwig von Mises like freaking crazy. Yes. Now, when you get into Rothbard, now you're talking about somebody who they don't like at all, ever. But
most libertarians don't even like Rothbard.
But Mises
they met him.
Mises was just basically he's libertarian now.
Ask Joe Hauptmann.
Well.
Joe Hauptmann, he's a libertarian from here in Indiana. He's debated Rothbard.
How are we supposed to appeal to these people that come to this show to listen to smart stuff and you guys just keep talking about junk?
He's
what?
A jerk.
We're talking about meeting Rothbard.
Right.
He's a what?
You can keep talking. People can listen to both conversations.
He's a joke?
No, he was a jerk.
Rothbard was a jerk.
He said he was real arrogant. He was, you know, divisive.
I still want to meet Rothbard.
He's dead.
You want to kiss him?
I know. I said would have wanted to meet Rothbard.
But, no, but Mises is, I mean, he's considered libertarian now because of what conservatives have been turned into, where they really do believe in huge government. But, I mean, Mises was not an anarchist. He was a small government guy. He was a classical liberal. He wrote a book called Liberalism.
He was close to Ayn Rand.
So, no, yeah, maybe. Maybe because they both believed, they used axioms in their philosophy a lot. But he was a classical liberal, which is what really traditional conservatives were. They were just kind of, they had to use something other than liberal because the Democrats and the liberals and the socialists took over the term and turned it into what it means now. But, I mean, historically, Mises has been relatively a conservative founder in America.
So with that tradition, we usually learn from history, right? Do you think that the Republican Party will steal, the phrase libertarian?
It's already happening, thanks to Ron Paul, jerk.
Yeah, look at Paul Ryan.
Look at Paul Ryan. They basically, it's like I said earlier, Paul Ryan, every election, finds Jesus, and then when nobody's paying attention in the year where there is no election, he votes for every big government program he can find.
Well, you guys seen the campaign yet?
No, I haven't.
No.
Has anybody
taken into consideration how my hand feels? That's all the only line I know that makes me laugh.
It's pretty funny.
So moving on from Rothbard and Mises, tell us about the campaign.
My point was that social conservative, in the sense that we understand it today, is not necessarily representative of conservative thought throughout the history of like what you could consider conservative thought in America. We're trying to say that people now are revolting against this social conservative thought as we know it in America. And I made the point that when Todd Akin said that, a lot of people immediately just assumed it was something that social conservatives just believed.
Did he have Chick-fil-A at this event?
I don't know. But
the internet is the great splinterer. And basically, you're going to continue to see conservatism and liberalism and progressivism and libertarianism. It'll just continue to splinter and splinter and splinter. You see it with the libertarians. We have voluntarists. We have anarchists. We have libertarians. We have constitutional libertarians.
You mean the fake libertarians?
Yeah, the fake, big the, fakers.
All the not fake committed ones. Libertarians fake that are ones. Only... They only apply their principle to half of life.
Paul libertarians, Johnson libertarians. I mean, it's just going to continue to split and split and split.
Right.
You know, and you see, I mean, that's one of the warning signs for the Republican Party that they're about to die. It's you saw this with the Whigs and, you know, learning from history. The Whigs, nobody wanted to be called a Whig anymore. They wanted to be called a Freeman Whig. They wanted to be called this. There was a qualifier to it. How many people do you know are proud Republicans? Oh, I'm a conservative Republican.
They're
I'm all a libertarian
old, they're,
Republican.
They're,
I'm
old,
a...
they're all old people that like to just say I'm a Republican.
Right. 10 years from now, nobody's going to be one.
I'm serious, man. When the baby boomers die, I really think the Republican Party is going to either – it's going to be so different that it's not even going to be recognizable or it's going to go away.
I really think
– I'm not saying that.
I think 20 years from now, and I'm hoping that it's the case, 20 to 30 years from now, our politics will look vastly different.
We'll have a Libertarian Party and an Anarchist Party.
And a Green Party. And
Anarchist
no, that's
Party?
It.
How
just
does that even
two.
Make sense? Anarchist Party?
Yeah.
By the way, let me...
Do you mean we're all going to go to a party?
Let's,
anarchists are going to go to a party?
Let's switch to the conventions. Let's see if we have any thoughts on the conventions. My thought for the Tampa convention is that anarchists, if the anarchists are in Tampa and they are there, anarchists will once again prove why anarchy will not work.
In Tampa?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. What does that, what does that even mean?
It means that when anarchists get together, they blow crap up, and then they show why you can't have anarchy.
You mean like the traditional left anarchists,
right?
So you're not referencing, you know, the philosophical anarchists,
philosophical
of
anarchists,
of
voluntarists, people who are peaceful. Of course not, but.
So you're referencing the people who were basically just communists and they used anarchy because it was divisive.
We need anarchy. So everyone can live peaceably. Blow it up.
Yeah.
Like whatever, dude.
We don't need people don't need money. There's no reason to have money in the world. It doesn't do anything.
I worked at Noodles and Company and the guy ruled over me like so hardcore. It was ridiculous. He never gave me the time off that I wanted off. He made
Are you guys
me work
doing liberal rants?
Yeah.
Like this is great.
Huh?
Hey, why don't you contribute to the show?
You guys aren't really talking about anything.
I know,
but
I'm just letting
you
do it.
How did we move from the Tampa? You
that's what I'm sitting here thinking. Like,
I'm
what
just
happened?
Saying, yeah. Why did you even bring up anarchists?
This,
why? I mean, where did that even come from?
Chris Spangles over here in the corner. Like,
I tell you what.
I promise, anarchists are not going to Florida.
This windscreen still smells great.
But
well,
I think it is kind of ironic, and it might be fate. That at the Republican National Convention is possibly going to be destroyed by a hurricane.
A legitimate hurricane.
Well, that would be amazing.
A legitimate hurricane.
I'm not going to Paul Fest, but I wish I was.
Because you have no money?
Because it would be amazing.
Going because it would be amazing?
A couple days ago, the Department of Justice finished their investigation on Fast and Furious.
What did they find?
They've submitted their report, but it's not out yet.
So the Department of Justice, who authorized Fast and Furious, investigated.
They get to
Fast
investigate themselves,
right?
Isn't those checks aren't those checks and balances just awesome?
I know.
So their report will be submitted to Congress, and then Congress will take action upon
them. Daryl Issa is going to have a field day.
He's going to say this report isn't right.
But maybe by next week's podcast, we'll know a little bit.
If anything today proves it, we don't know anything.
I mean,
we just come into here every week. Like,
see what happens when I'm not here, listeners. I've got
a. This is a fact you might want to check out because I heard it randomly, and it might be true. tell us about your little gizmo over here. What have you got? You have a laptop. Is this a laptop that you have, my boy?
I guess you could call it a laptop. It's a transformer. It's a hybrid.
It's a computer, and it's on your
laptop.
It's an Asus.
It's a computer, and it's on your lap. So I guess you could call it a laptop.
So it's an Asus tablet that then plugs into dock.
Because
yeah.
they do make things similar to that for iPad, but you cannot have him have an iPad.
And yeah.
So. Whoa.
There's nothing similar to this for an iPad. First of all, this is a 16:9 ratio screen.
Oh.
iPads are 4:5.
Oh,
it's not widescreen.
Boom,
this is much better for movies and media viewing than an iPad ever would be.
I think.
First of all, if you had an iPad connected to a laptop dock of the same size, it'd be an oddly shaped laptop.
Well,
it would be. This is a normal shaped laptop.
The thing is, he knows a lot about Apple because he hates them so much.
Right.
So
you guys not talk tech at all?
No.
I need to be here. Why didn't we spend the whole podcast talking about the
Samsung
patent wars?
Because we don't know anything about it. We were talking
Samsung
about
Samsung was ordered to pay $1.5 billion to Apple.
Even though they won, right?
Even though they won.
Yeah.
So does that basically that? My question with that, because I saw the breaking news, but I don't really know much about it. What is wrong with your phone? It looks like it curves.
It is. It's a contour. All right, so we're getting off topic again, but my phone is not flat. It is curved.
Wow.
It is curved slightly.
Doesn't BlackBerry make those?
What?
Doesn't BlackBerry make those?
Curved phones?
What's the point of it?
Never mind.
Does it like make it easier for you to touch it?
It's supposed to be more convenient, better feeling in your hand that it's shaped to your... I don't know. I like it, but it's slightly curved all the way.
Apparently,
around.
It's supposed to do something cool, but he doesn't know.
He doesn't know if it does anything.
He should get it.
I mean,
now Samsung and Apple. Tell us about why Apple sued Samsung, and will Samsung continue to exist after yesterday?
I'll give you my version of why Apple sued Samsung, and then I'll give you the technical version.
Give us the facts first,
then
give your opinion.
Apple has sued Samsung for violating patent infringements.
Okay.
That Apple has had. In my version, those are the facts.
Thank you for the facts, yes.
In other words, Apple can't beat Samsung anymore.
Freaking
Samsung's
Brian Ross over here.
Samsung is the number one handset maker, and Apple's been that for a while.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Samsung is huge now. Their Galaxy S and Galaxy S3 series have dominated the market.
Samsung makes the best televisions. If you want to buy a flat screen TV, you buy a Samsung.
I don't know. Sony makes good TVs.
No, Samsung is better.
we can argue televisions later, but lost my point now.
Yeah, I know. Well,
how high are
you right now?
Whatever. This is the guy who brings up random stuff in the podcast for no reason. so
what?
You guys are really hard to
talk
to.
We're so terrible at this.
All right.
So
anyway, Samsung's doing a great job of overcoming Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Apple is afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, they are. They should be. Next quarter, they could only have 25% of the cell phone market if it stays this way. They're dropping bad.
Next quarter, they'll have
Apple depends a lot on their mobile, a lot on the iPad and the iPhone. I mean, they do. So Apple's only real choice is to start lawsuits with their competitors. To stop them from gaining this market
share.
But they
all do that, though.
Yeah. No.
Microsoft sues Apple. Apple sues Google.
Well, that's what the Sherman Antitrust Act was for.
Google doesn't sue everybody.
Google does sue everybody.
Actually, what I think this is going to lead to, if we're
going
to get to what I think this is going to lead to then.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, patent laws, this set precedent for tech patent laws.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now you can enforce a patent about the way you scroll on a touchscreen. Like, it's ridiculous. The shape of your rectangular black phone can be patented.
Which is silly.
And Google has patents, but they've never really done this, like, all-out major lawsuit against a company, a rival before.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think is going to happen is Apple's going to wake the sleeping giant. Like, Google's just sitting there, and Google's way bigger than Samsung. Like,
sure.
I mean,
it's
tech-wise.
Apple
versus Samsung is a lot smaller than Apple versus Google.
Apple versus Google is the tech fight that nobody wants because everything will become more expensive in tech. because, you know, our patent system, and I don't know how if we've ever really gone in depth on this, our patent system, just like you talked about, is totally screwed up. It's outdated. It doesn't move fast enough. If you go get a degree in computer sciences at IUPUI, by the time you start your freshman year to the time that you finish your senior year, the stuff you learned in your freshman year no longer applies by the end of your senior year. It's, you know, computer science is just moving too quickly, and law cannot keep up with patent law.
Right.
So it is because obviously we see how slow government moves, rightly so. That's how it was designed by our founders. So patent law and technology patents especially, it just can't catch up.
Right.
And we're patenting things like a touchscreen that is, you know.
Think about how that destroys innovation. If Apple could have patented a touchscreen, like, what would Android phones be made out of
sure.
now? I don't know. There might not be Android phones. There could just be iPhones.
It is 2012. I just had my 10th year high school reunion. We didn't have MySpace yet, even. Okay? It was 2 years before we had MySpace.
So old.
I know. We didn't have Facebook until my senior year of college.
Dang.
At IUPUI, and that was because Facebook finally got IUPUI.edu as an acceptable email address. How old is the iPod? 2005? The iPhone?
The iPod's pretty old. The iPhone was 08?
08?
I want to say.
Like, Barack Obama was elected shortly after the first iPhone came out.
Have you seen the first iPod? You remember the first iPod? It was crazy awesome because it had the first time where you can actually use like a scroll
right.
on the dial, but it was still black, and you know, it was like, what are those called? Where it's just black. It isn't. There's no like color. There's no touchscreen. It was just the black screen where
right.
it was white with the black letters.
It was what? Black and white.
You know what I mean? No, but what's that called? Is that liquid crystal?
What? Yes. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
okay.
Like LCD.
The LCD, but it wasn't color LCD.
For
it
sure.
It was like cell phones were in 1997. Is what it was.
No, yeah.
Exactly.
We
so
get what you're
you could play
so,
Snake on it.
Yeah. So and that was the first iPod. What it looked.
Everyone
like.
Everyone knows, and the listeners probably know that I'm not a very big Apple fan, but. Honestly, I've talked to libertarians that are Apple fans,
mm-hmm.
and they're not on Apple's side in this case. Like,
it's because intellectual property
right.
laws have become ridiculously abused, and that
right.
was the point.
Yeah.
The Sherman Antitrust Act is another good example of how competition is stifled by government trying to promote it. Because
right.
Google just got attacked through the Sherman Antitrust Act recently,
yep.
and all the Sherman Antitrust Act has become is a way for companies that can't outdo better companies in the market to use the government to help them because they're being oppressed
well,
because of the big bad company.
Can I make another prediction?
Please.
The future of the patent laws, or of this case, I think it's going to help Microsoft make a comeback. Especially in mobile.
Especially if Windows 8 and the Windows phone starts to really – if you have basically Android versus iPods and iPhones and iOS essentially, it's Android versus iOS.
Right.
Then that starts to slow their growth.
Windows is going to jump in here.
And by all accounts, the Windows phones are not that bad.
Yeah. And Microsoft's been in the game for a long time. And
right.
people are counting them out. But, I mean –
they updated their logo.
First time in 25 years they changed their logo.
Basically to like four color squares.
Yeah.
And somebody made it.
What do you mean Microsoft's going to come in on the phones, right?
And like things like this.
Don't mm-hmm. they? But they still dominate regular PCs, right?
Right.
Yes.
But they have like minuscule amount of the mobile market. It's
yeah,
terrible.
That's what I thought.
They're like the only one they're beating is like Symbian, like. Nothing anybody uses.
The thinking is that just the reason people like iOS and they like Apple products is because if you have a Mac computer, I have a PC laptop, or I did because my PC just died this week.
Mm-hmm.
After 7 years, I got the blue screen of death and it won't boot. So I'm in the market for a new laptop, and it would be easier because I need like a real computer, not a tablet.
I mean...
Does that have USB?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we'll talk after the show. You can give me that.
It doesn't have a CD drive.
If you have an Apple laptop and you have an Apple phone and you have an Apple tablet, then it all sort of works together. It's
it does.
A consistent environment.
Well, that's why they made it that
But
way.
I mean, right. if you have a Google tablet and a Google phone and you use Google on your computer, Mac or
PC. If you have the internet, Google works on everything.
Yeah, Google works on the internet. Like anything.
As long as you have the internet,
I mean,
so
actually, you can sync Google with your iPhone. So,
Windows is about to come out with that all-inclusive environment.
The Windows 8 Surface tablet.
Now, the question is Windows, will they be Windows, or will they think outside of the box? Because Microsoft is always thinking about enterprise, they're thinking about business, and so it all becomes totally clunky, and it's not sleek and cool Google and Apple.
Have you guys seen the Surface 8?
Yes.
I've seen the Metro design. Is that
okay, well, the
about?
Tablet. Microsoft's getting into the hardware game this year, and they're launching Windows 8 with a Surface laptop.
Meaning, like, it sits on your desk?
Yes, it's a laptop. And they're making it. It's made by Microsoft and not by, like... Normally, computers are made by Acer or whatever.
HP.
Then they buy Nokia, too. Windows, I think, bought Nokia.
Okay. That sounds right. I don't know that, though.
Which is, like, the largest phone maker outside of the U.S.
But the Surface is very innovative. And if the price rumors are true, for $199, a laptop...
Oh, yeah, that'll go like crazy.
With a touchscreen and it's a tablet?
Yeah,
like,
that
it'll be like hotcakes. And they might lose a little bit of money, but the market shares they gain for the future, they'll set them back up.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's my one. I think that this patent law decision will help Microsoft. I think it'll hurt people like Google and hit their partners with, like, Samsung and Motorola. And HTC is going to go bankrupt soon with their OnLive deal, and they sold 49% of their shares to Beats Audio, Dr. Dre, and like I think they're going to go bankrupt.
Which are like
it's
the
sad.
Worst headphones too. If you want good earbuds, please do not buy Beats by Dr. Dre.
Well, and HTC used to make great phones.
If you want good earbuds, get the Klipsch earbuds.
Yeah, this one's good.
Klipsch earbuds. Those are the best.
No,
this one's
Shure E5s.
No, Klipsch. I'm telling you.
Ultimate ears.
I'm telling you,
earbuds or headphones?
Go to Best Buy.
Earbuds or
earbuds.
Headphones? Yeah.
Go to Best Buy.
Ultimate ears.
Go to Best Buy, get the Klipsch $80 earbuds.
Nope.
And I know that sounds outrageous, but
I mean,
those in your ears, and then you listen to a .flac, a FLAC
sounds
recording.
Crazy.
It sounds like you're in the room with Amy Winehouse. You can smell the drugs coming off of the girl.
Okay. So the headphones
give
you extra smells.
Why are you listening to Amy Winehouse?
Because Amy Winehouse is good. She's not like Avril Lavigne.
Whoa.
Does that mean Avril Lavigne's good? Is that what
No,
that
I'm saying Avril
was?
Lavigne is terrible, but people think that like Amy Winehouse.
Because you were like, Amy Winehouse is good. I mean, she's not like Avril Lavigne.
No, okay, no.
Like,
she's not that
Avril
good.
Lavigne's awesome.
Avril Lavigne, where this week, got engaged to Chad Kroeger of Nickelback. And I forget who it was. I think it was somebody on Twitter said.
Avril Lavigne has to still be. Like, last time I saw her, she's probably still, like, what, 18 years old now?
She's, like, in her almost 30. Like, she's our age.
Spangler, you like Adele?
Yeah, I love Adele.
I like Adele. It's like the only girl I like, though.
I don't know. I like.
Wow.
I was revealing. I have a Compaq.
A Compaq computer?
Yeah.
Wow.
What does that have to do with
Adele? So 1997.
What does that have to do with
Adele? What does that have to do with
Adele? Adele computer. Get it?
You guys are
okay,
just
I get
smooth.
It. I get it. It took me a second.
Yeah, Chris Galt's only been up for like 14 minutes. So
I've been on the podcast for more than 14
I know,
minutes.
That's what I'm saying. The first 15 minutes, you were a little sleepy.
All right.
I don't know. Adele, I can respect her as a good singer, but I just don't like the music.
No, Chad Kroeger and Avril Lavigne this week got married, and when they have a child, they're going to rebel, and they'll be good musicians. Thank you very much.
Anyway, that's patent law
101 with Chris Galt.
Feel free to ask some questions and
patent law 101.
I'll do some research and answer them. I myself am quite interested in this, so I'll probably read some more opinions on it and have some more opinions next week.
Next week I might have some information for you.
No, I feel like I had some this week. But
all right, well, we have gone.
But God forbid we don't have any stifling innovation with all these companies, because not too long from now our phones are going to be able to basically just be us. We'll just sit around and do nothing. They're going to be a surrogate.
Well, it's kind of sad.
And their Skynet will take over by then, too.
They're already starting to implant chips. They've built technology that they can implant chips into near the temple, and then it connects to your eardrum. So then you can start to hear the phone call and talk, and it's like a whole thing.
Well, you can swallow can swallow digital pills.
Todd, you guys.
Todd Akin was right. The mark of the beast is close.
Relating this back to the case. If Apple patents that, no one else can do it.
That's right. Screw
only
you guys.
For a specific amount of time.
Go Apple.
But it's a while.
But you know
tech,
what?
Tech patents are just as long as any other patent.
It'll work.
Is it 10 years? Is that
it's
how it...
pretty long. It's long enough to make it irrelevant when you get...
Yeah.
I mean, with tech, 10 years, they're going to have holograms in front of your
I
face.
I mean, think about it. 4 years ago, we got the iPhone. Okay, now we're on iPhone 5. You know, with the Retina display.
Well, I mean,
and,
didn't Steve, I mean, Steve okay. Jobs had info
we can talk
to iPhone 7?
I mean, but
right?
now, I mean, we started with the HTC G1 with Google, and now we've got the Samsung Galaxy Nexus that I can touch my phone to a credit card machine and pay.
Well, you do that a lot with, like, what? There's a couple brands of phones you can do that with.
But not iPhones.
What was
oh,
the, what was the first touchscreen phone? Was it the...
It was a Samsung phone.
Believe was it before or after the iPod
it was,
Touch?
Oh, the iPod. It was before the iPhone.
Right.
I'm not sure about the iPod.
So is that where the dispute comes in? The
right.
fact that they did the iPod
They never made
touch.
It a phone, though.
Right.
And Samsung had a touchscreen phones. Like, Samsung's argument was, these are all of our phones before the iPhone. They brought a bunch of them. And many of them are black, rectangular with cornered or rounded edges and touchscreen.
Right.
And they have a grid layout. Like, these are the things that Apple said they patent or infringed on, which I guess they did. I mean,
well, the Samsung one, though.
The way a screen bounces at the bottom of a page, like, it was patented by Apple and they.
But Samsung won.
That.
I thought
like,
Samsung won.
No,
they just had to pay.
No, they lost. Well, they won a majority of the patent. The, they sued them like 80 different patents. So Samsung won a majority. But they still lost many patents.
Oh.
That's why they're paying.
Well, then why doesn't Apple pay Samsung for...
They did. iPhones are now banned in
Get the music ready.
Wow.
Sorry, go ahead. You're
wow.
supposed to keep talking while I whisper to you.
iPhones and iPads are now banned in South Korea. They ruled yesterday that Apple infringed. They ruled for themselves. And now you can't sell iPhones and stuff in... South Korea.
Wah.
But I think I'm really nervous about Galaxy S sales in the U.S. as a result of this. I don't know if
yeah.
they're going to make them pull them.
I feel bad because I talked... Because
my phone's already been banned once, like, and they had to downgrade it and bring it back out.
I know. I felt bad because I talked to Evan McMahon. He sold me his iPad, and then I talked him into getting the Samsung Tab. I talked him out of getting the what was the other one that it was competing with, the Samsung,
the Acer.
No, it wasn't the Acer.
Oh.
It was
the
Toshiba
one, Thrive?
The Motorola. The Motorola.
Oh, the Zoom, the one
Zoom.
I had.
Yeah, that everybody was freaking out over, and I said, "No, Samsung is clearly superior." And then, like 2 months later, they stopped making it, so there's no parts for it.
I don't
even think he uses it.
The only this is my first Samsung phone, and I won't buy another one. Ever again from Samsung, unless it's straight from Google like this one. Samsung puts a lot of crap on their phones, kind of like HP does on their computers.
When did you get that phone?
This phone, I've had it for a while.
Oh, okay. I recognize it now.
Yeah, there wasn't much junk on this one.
Yeah, HTC's pretty good about it. It's got a few apps on there that are from
HTC.
Let's,
by the way, give a round of applause to Creighton Harrington for no longer having a BlackBerry.
Oh, yes. I'm proud of him for going HTC Google. Like, he actually... Looked at the phones, did his research.
I'm proud of him. My BlackBerry quit working.
You can tell he did his market research before he bought the phone.
Wait, your BlackBerry quit working? Just like the company. Hey-o!
Well, yeah. No, the hardware part, though.
Did you know, I read from the BlackBerry RIM CEO, that they were this close. Like, I guess listeners can't see my fingers.
But they're this close
they
if
were,
you can't see them.
They were very, very close to switching to Android.
Really?
And they decided not to because it wasn't businessy enough. And
you know what?
If they would have, they'd be top three handset makers.
I don't necessarily believe that because
no,
some of the crap you can do on this thing is just basically everything I was trying to do on my BlackBerry,
but
better.
Visually nicer.
BlackBerry almost went that way.
Yeah, I mean, like, all I ever wanted to do with my BlackBerry is I had it synced with all my Google stuff, and it got emails.
It's nice now, isn't it?
And all it does that, too, anyway.
BlackBerry has two choices. They can either get out of the hardware business or get out of the software business. I mean, they can either stop making handsets and focus on developing their software for iOS and Android and, you know, things like BBM and becoming more of a software company that focuses on enterprise, or they can start focusing on building handsets and switch to Android. I mean, they really only have two choices.
Well, I mean, their new one is like they're so hardcore not wanting to get rid of the keys.
Mm-hmm.
So it's touchscreen and it has keys.
Oh my gosh. One of those dorky little like
flip phones. It doesn't flip at all. I mean, it's the BlackBerry.
You, like, slide it up.
It looks like every BlackBerry you've ever seen, but you can actually touch the screen now.
I mean, my laptop here is touchscreen and it has
keys.
But
it's not a laptop. It's a docking station.
It's a laptop.
It's a tablet that has a nice docking station that, so it looks like basically a Microsoft or an Apple MacBook Air.
You know what though? I'm old school.
That's the way to describe.
One of the things that I have against like tablets though, using them as full fledged computers, is I can't stand not having a mouse.
It has a mouse.
Where?
I mean, use it. It has a mouse.
No, a mouse.
I can plug a mouse into it.
Yeah, well.
It has USB.
It doesn't. I don't see the USB.
It's right there covered up by that plastic purple or gray thing.
Okay.
But I can plug a mouse and a keyboard into that. I just need a hub if I'm going to plug more than one thing. I need a hub.
An SD card. It's got. What's this thingy over here?
That is. That's the charger, but the one on the top left, that is micro HDMI, so I can plug it into a TV.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it basically is a docking station, so it looks like a MacBook Air. How much did this cost?
I got it for...
What are you working some deals over there you don't want to expose?
I got it for about $400.
Okay. How much would it cost me if I went into Best Buy today?
About $800. $750.
Should we ask what you did? Was it legitimate?
I got it from Craigslist. So yeah, it was legitimate.
Wow.
Guy's really nice.
Yeah, because he didn't want you to turn him into the cops. No. That's why.
No, he was straight. He wasn't.
So you met a straight guy on Craigslist who gave you a deal.
All right, you guys.
All right, well, if you, my good sir, wouldn't mind hitting the music, and then we will close up shop here. We're actually going to have outro music this time. And this one is dedicated to our non-taxpaying presidential candidate, Mitt Romney.
Unplug it and plug it back in.
Oh. Plug it in all the way.
It is plugged in all the way,
no,
isn't
it's
it?
Not. You know what it is? It's that case.
Color. Hang on.
You got to take it out of the case. Technology.
Creighton experimenting with his new phone. That's going to suck. Dude, have you tried headphones in it yet? Is that plug just a little big?
All right.
Yeah, this is a pretty big
one. While he fixes that, quick opinion. Mitt Romney's joke on Barack Obama being not born in this country, funny or inflammatory?
Old and sad.
Old and sad?
We've been there, done that.
I thought it was funny.
I didn't think it was really funny.
I turned into MSNBC last night for Martin Bashir. He's like, and Mitt Romney has hit an absolute new low, joining the ranks of Donald Trump. I'm like, oh my gosh, come on now. It was a joke. And I thought Mitt Romney's response, yeah, we're just trying to inject a little humor. So
I mean,
I didn't
really think it was that funny of a joke.
It wasn't that great.
I don't know. I mean,
you playing?
Yep.
Cool.
Sounds like a great recording from 1932.
Who is this a tribute to?
This is Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney.
This is one Mr. Cab Calloway with Minnie the Moocher here on We Are Libertarians.
And yes, I have this on my phone, and you guys can not hate for having 1920s music on my HTC.
I hit the post, and you stepped on it.
Nope.
So, all right, guys. Well, thank you for joining us. Thanks to Liberty Osmosis. Thank you to Rivertown Radio. Thank you to Stitcher. Check us out on all those places or visit us at podcast.lpin.org. If you would like to leave a comment or ask a question or something that we can read on air, go to wearelibertarians.com. That'll take you to our Facebook page. And as always, we promise we'll do better next week. Thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good,
though. It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo.
Boo.
This podcast is produced by What is a Hoosier Productions.